ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, it's Lisa Leong from This Working Life, helping to make your work life better with advice from the world's top experts, like psychotherapist Esther Perel.
Many conflicts are about power. Power is when I dismiss what you're bringing up. Power is when I magnify a problem.
And Professor Adam Grant.
We need to take our critics and our cheerleaders and turn them into coaches.
Free coaching! Search for This Working Life on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pull up a bar stool. It's story time. Tycho Brahe liked to throw a party. Do you know, old mate? Yeah, me neither, but he was an astronomer from the 16th century, helped the launch of the scientific revolution, and apparently he lost his nose in a drunken duel with his cousin as they were trying to ascertain who was better at maths.
No, I'm better at maths. Yeah!
After that, he had a prosthetic nose made of brass, that one, for daily wear, but for special occasions, a gold one. Anyway, Brahe was pretty rich. He owned a castle, predicted futures, and was passionate about alchemy. And in his day, Tycho Brahe had a pet elk that he used to party with. One dinner party, the elk had too much beer, fell down the stairs, and died. An inebriated elk, off its chops. What the duck? Welcome to Nature's Most Wanted, a series from What the Duck, where I have trawled through the internet like an amateur sleuth to find the most heinous, dangerous, famous, and ignoramus crimes committed by animals. You know, roadrunners caught dangerous driving, and silver gulls detained for loitering with intent. I'm Dr. Anne Jones, and in previous episodes, we have discussed animals who murder, steal, destroy property, and get in the way of the military during wartime. But in this episode, it's criminal mischief and the reasons behind it. Welcome to episode 5 of this series, which I've called Drunk and Disorderly. Apparently, there's a long historical association between elephants and grog. There's this story from Indian mythology where a drunk elephant misbehaves in a village and it smashes houses and carts and tramples people, and eventually it's calmed down by Buddha himself, which is pretty amazing. I'm imagining something like Crocodile Dundee with the hang loose hand signal. Seriously though, elephant-human conflicts in India is a problem of astounding scale. With an average of 450 human deaths per year across the country. But even more surprising in this nationwide conflict is that alcohol plays a role. For a start, data from the area of North Bengal pointed to about 36% of the people who were killed being drunk. You know, show-offs. An idiot, a bloke thinking he can take on 18 elephants in a fight, that sort of thing. But the elephants in this equation are not necessarily teetotalers. Something like 8% of the deaths by wild elephants in North Bengal occurred when the human was in their own home and asleep. Many villagers apparently make their own alcohol, fermenting things that they will later imbibe. And so that no one takes their illicit alcohol, they'll drag it inside their house. In the dead of night, the elephants will literally smash an elephant-sized hole in the side of a building because they can smell the alcohol in there and they really feel like a drink. But maybe this whole elephant raiding for alcohol thing is only surprising to me because I come from a place where kangaroos punch on rather than where elephants get pissed. But the internet does indicate to me that there are plenty of stories of animals getting drunk.
I've heard of a moose getting stuck in an apple tree because it was trying to eat the fermenting apples.
A maggoted moose. Marieke Janjak is, among other things, a biologist and genomicist.
There are stories about birds, especially cedar waxwings, that are birds that occur here in Canada. They're known to eat these fermenting berries.
That happens in Australia too. In Darwin, there is an annual season for legless lorikeets.
A pickled parrot may seem comical.
Not actually legless, I mean drunk.
This lorikeet looks drunk, and it even
acts drunk. It's something like a sobering up shelter for lorikeets.
They stumble around, so a lot
but there are serious side effects.
And it's one mega hangover.
It's not my fault you've been drinking.
Those birds are three tweets to the wind. Back to Marieke, talking about drunk elephants.
It's so widespread that I think there's safaris that actually use this in their advertising.
They post these videos of elephants looking floppy. They look like their heads are heavier than normal and, oh, I just need to have a little lie down here for a moment. But what does the science say? I found a paper on binge drinking where rodents, non-human primates and flies were found to drink alcohol readily, reaching very high blood alcohol levels and becoming obviously intoxicated. But of course, the animal that gets the most points for drunken idiocy is humans, because we literally invented the phrase, hold my beer. So how did we arrive here? As the leading lights of inebriation.
Humans have a mutation in one of the genes that codes for a protein that breaks down ethanol, or alcohol as we commonly call it. This mutation was not unique to humans, but it was actually shared with humans, chimpanzees, and gorillas. So that means it must have evolved in our common ancestor.
So great apes, and not so great apes, I suppose, have a gene that enables us to tolerate alcohol. Not just tolerate, in fact, convert alcohol into energy. It's like we're the chosen ones.
The idea is that our ancestors became more terrestrial, so they started moving on the ground more. They were encountering fallen fruits. You know, once they've been there for a while, they start fermenting. So by being able to digest and metabolize that ethanol that's found in these fruits, you're able to eat more of them without having really detrimental effects.
By being able to digest this toxin, you're opening up energy resources that other animals might not be able to access.
Yeah, that's roughly the idea.
But where is this gene in the other animals? Because you said it happened because we started getting around on the ground and eating fruit, but heaps of animals do that.
And that's actually kind of what inspired our research.
This is research that Marieke undertook at the University of Calgary.
So we actually looked across 85 different mammals, and we did find that other frugivores, so other fruit-eating mammals, didn't have the exact same change as humans, but they had other changes in the same location of that gene.
So they might have other ways of metabolizing ethanol, just not the same way that we humans do, the world champions of digesting alcohol. So what about these stories of drunk elephants, though? What does the science say about this? Well, in 2007, there was a paper published that basically poo-pooed the shit-faced elephants, saying that the stories are likely just all folklore because an elephant could never, ever eat enough fermented fruit per body weight to get drunk.
It said it's impossible, and the flaw in these was that they used the human ethanol metabolism efficiency in that calculation.
World champions of digesting alcohol.
Which we know is very special, it's unique.
So what those other scientists did was calculate how much ethanol is needed for an elephant-sized human to get drunk.
Exactly.
Now, to be fair, those authors didn't say elephants can't get drunk. There's heaps of examples of it. With the human-made alcohol, it is known that elephants can get blotto. But what these scientists were saying was that with fermented fruit, there would be nowhere near enough devil's juice. But they didn't know about elephant genes, did they?
When we started looking into this, we realized quickly that elephants actually have what we call a pseudogene, and that means it's not functioning anymore. So we can definitely say that elephants don't have the same rate of ethanol metabolism that we do.
So you're saying that per kilogram of body weight, it would potentially take elephants a lot less ethanol for them to get drunk?
Potentially.
So the fermented fruit might be enough because elephants are the world's biggest lightweights.
You could potentially say that, but we don't know the rates at which elephants metabolize ethanol.
Mainly because the police have not yet managed to breatho any elephants at traffic stops.
No. Further research is needed.
Did you test donkeys? Because I found this story, which is amazing, about this donkey in Mexico who gets really drunk.
Good morning, I'm Renee Montaigne. A donkey has been released from a Mexican jail. Blackie the Burro was charged with assault and battery after biting and kicking two men near a ranch in Chiapas.
That snippet of news was from NPR. It apparently took six men to get this enraged beast under control. What an ass. So, should this donkey have claimed it was his genetics that meant he only had one drink, even though it appeared he was a burro on a bender?
So we didn't look at donkeys specifically, but we looked at horses.
Pretty closely related genetically.
And interestingly, horses are similar to elephants in that they don't have a functioning gene anymore. So it's quite possible that the donkey you're talking about was also quite a lightweight.
Bad news for jackasses out there listening. Your propensity of two-pot screaming is why your Mexican cousins have been in the clink. ABC Radio National is probably not completely proud to present this latest episode of What the Duck. I'm Dr. Anne Jones, and lately I've been on a crime spree, that is, investigating stories from around the world where animals do stuff that's probably illegal. And we all know that alcohol isn't the cause of behaviour, it's part of the explanation, right? But what about other crimes where the perpetrators are stone martens sober?
I think the most aggressive animal that's around is probably the wild boar.
You remember Christine Sutton? Well, if you like birds, then go back and listen to the previous episode of this series. But for context, in Switzerland, there's this huge facility called CERN where physicists do experiments to try and understand what particles got up to at the beginning of time. You know, Big Bang stuff. And Christine worked there for years. This is where we left you last time.
And there have been more extreme things that have happened, actually.
More extreme than a bird with a sandwich causing the shutdown of a multi-million dollar Hadron Collider.
Oh, 10 years later, there was a stone marten.
A marten, not a Martian. A stone marten is essentially a wonderful little weasel ferret thing. Elongated body, short legs, inquisitive face, and a bite force that can crush skulls. Small ones, because it's only got a little mouth.
A marten gnawed a cable. They did find poor little beast just lying, having electrocuted himself. But he brought things to a standstill as well.
Yep, the marten caused a very big zzz, and the Hadron Collider stopped colliding hadrons. 6 months later, another stone marten went zappo and was instantaneously electrocuted by an 18,000-volt transformer. This sort of sabotage of multi-billion-dollar facilities isn't a bad effort for a 1 or 2 kilogram animal.
They're actually a pest in the area because they go into people's cars and gnaw the cables. People who talk about, oh, we've had the fouine, which is the French for, and eaten our cables in the car. They are a nuisance.
In fact, towards the end of 2023, the GDV, the German Insurance Association, reported that martens caused 104 million euros worth of damage to cars in 12 months. So why are the martens such vandals? I contacted Martin scientists, and while there were lots of theories about it, there is, at this stage, no evidence. Essentially, it appears that Martins do it because they can. And the second Martin at CERN, by the way, complete with singed feet and a small bottle of ashes, is now part of the Rotterdam Natural History Museum's collection of ill-fated human-animal interactions. It does look a little worse for wear, as if it was taxidermied by a door snake with an unfortunate overbite.
But evidently this person who runs that section of the museum has a thing about, you know, it's a bit like your podcast. He's got a thing about just weird animal stuff.
I do have a thing about weird animal stuff.
You're listening to Weird Animal Stuff on ABC Radio National. And so far, we've learnt that sometimes it's a slug of whiskey that leads to a crime, but other times, it's just a slug.
My name's Kate Connolly, and I am the Berlin correspondent for The Guardian newspaper.
Which is a serious job.
Yeah, and you want me to talk about slugs on doorbells.
It's true.
It was the tail end of the summer, what they call here the cucumber season. Some people in a block of flats in the town of Schwabach had been woken late at night by persistent ringing on their doorbell. And they had thought that it might have been kids from over the road doing a so-called bell prank, what the Germans would call a Klingelstreich.
And apparently all the doorbells in the whole building are going off.
So that's when they decided to call the police.
What sort of menace was on the loose? Ringing doorbells at 10 p.m. at night and interrupting the bedtime routines of these hard-working Germans.
And then the police came to discover that there was a slug, or you might be happy to learn the German word for this is a Nacktschnecke, which is a naked snail. Yeah.
Extremely dangerous stuff. Let's get a terror alert out. Code red.
And this naked snail was traversing the door entry panel where the bells were and leaving a lovely slime trail as it crawled over the sensors. So the police had a field day with this and reported in their very serious statement to the local media that they had apprehended the animal. They had brought it down to size and placed it on a nearby stretch of grass. And after that, I'm afraid the trail goes cold. We don't know what happened to the slug. That's more or less as much as I can tell you.
But what if I was to tell you that this is just the latest in a worldwide spate of slug-related doorbell crimes? In Essex in 2021, our victim, let's call her Leanne because that's what the news report said her name was, Leanne was baffled by her doorbell going off and no one appearing on the camera footage. And this happened multiple times. But then two little antennae appear. And Leanne obviously thinks it's an alien, but then realises after reviewing the footage that it was a slug. But that is like saying that Christopher Skase was a primate. It's not specific enough to get through a court of law. So who could I possibly call on to help identify this perpetrator?
In the UK, we only have about 44 species of slug.
But do you have criminal slugs?
Apparently so. I didn't realise that until I got an email from you.
I didn't choose the slug life. The slug life chose me. Dr. Imogen Cavadino is the prosecution's expert witness because she literally wrote her PhD thesis about urban slugs in Britain. So, with our very own Sluglock Holmes, let's identify the perpetrator from Essex. First point of evidence. The video was taken around October.
Gives us some clues on who it could be.
Yes.
So around this time of year, you've got a lot of species that are very mature and potentially out and about looking for mates. So that already gives us kind of an inkling of who they could be.
And in the video's background, you can see a car park and there's just heaps of concrete. There's hardly any greenery.
Yeah, so that rules out a lot of our ancient woodland specialists.
That makes them sound like they're some sort of magical slug fairies. Of course, they wouldn't commit a crime.
So in the video, you kind of see some tentacles appear, crawling up. And I think you even get a little shot of the bottom tentacles.
Bottom tentacles?
So on slugs, you've got two sets of sensory tentacles. The top ones have the eye stalks, and the bottom set are more chemical receptors.
Oh, she means the little tentacles that look like mustaches.
So helpfully, the slug crawls up to the doorbell and then moves around a little bit and then crawls up the other side of it. But the amount of time it spends crawling over the doorbell suggests it's quite a long slug.
Okay, it's long.
You've got quite slender tentacles along with the quite slender body.
It's slender.
So that rules out some of our big chunky species that we see. Then after this long, slow climb over, you get a nice view of the tapering tail tip. And that helps narrow down which family we're in, which I think makes it one of the Lammasidae, which is the long-keeled slugs.
Ooh, we've narrowed it down to a crime family. And in this case, it's the long-keeled slugs. The keel bit refers to the ridge right down their back. But we need a suspect, not a football team. So can you narrow it down even further?
Potentially, it could be some of the Ambigalemax.
They're generally
these are two main. But my gut feeling is that it's more likely to be a leopard slug.
Guilty. A leopard slug.
I could be wrong here.
Oh, okay. Probably guilty. A leopard slug.
They have this reputation for being carnivorous as well.
Oh, my dog was Leanne in danger and she didn't even realise it.
But that's mainly because they're actually strongly territorial, which is quite unusual.
But is that what that slug was up to, patrolling its borders?
Generally in October is when the leopard slugs are crawling around looking for mates.
Right.
And to do that, they actually look for a vertical surface to climb up.
Right.
Hopefully they'll find a mate up there, or they might have a mate following them.
Right.
And what they're trying to find is a surface where they can overhang. And to mate, they have this quite fantastical display.
Right.
Where they'll create these long ropes of mucus and they dangle down from it together, twine their bodies together, and then extrude the genitalia below.
Oh my lord, sex on a bungee cord. It is literally a slug swingers party.
And it has that kind of glowing effect. So if that's caught on camera in light, their genitalia is really translucent, so it kind of glows really amazingly under camera light.
Shining genitals. Leanne unwittingly captured the very start of a slug porno. The doorbell rings, and who's there? The slug stud. Finding love in all the wrong places, like Leanne's doorbell camera, can lead to all sorts of trouble. It got a squirrel arrested in Germany after it harassed a woman so much in a park that she called the cops and got it taken away for stalking. But back to our physics correspondent, Chris, whose stories of animals interfering with CERN infrastructure just keep escalating. It's like a crime spree.
I don't know. I mean,
Now, as far as I'm aware, this story has never, ever made it into the media, which is a miracle.
This one didn't escape from out into the world from CERN.
Previous to the Hadron Collider, there were other colliders. This place is essentially a crash test dummy field, but for physics. This old collider was called the Large Electron Positron Collider.
The person who'd been in charge of the accelerator, he talked about it. You know, what was it like trying to get the accelerator going? He said, oh, well, there is the time we had Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, a science love story.
There was a big power cut and they went outside and evidently it had electrocuted two Mr. and Mrs. Deer in the act.
Oh my God!
So they referred to them as Romeo and Juliet after that, these two deer.
Oh my God! Two deer king.
But the poor deer were electrocuted and died, you know. They didn't end up in a museum, I hasten to add.
The mind boggles. Was there an excess of moisture? Did hooves bridge the negative and positive bits of a battery? Was there a biting down on a power cable? Was it really, finally, CERN's Big Bang? That's what I call a climax. A round of applause for Romeo and Juliet Deer, who, in the throes of coitus, clamped onto a cable with such force they pierced the protective coating and brought science to a halt. Also, randy slugs, ringing random doorbells, drunk elephants, and stoats that got smote. In the next episode of our special series, Nature's Most Wanted, I've got so much to tell you, and you've got so much to think about, including, can you leave your house to your dog in your will? I'm Dr. Anne Jones, Chief Investigator with the CIABC Division of Felonious Fauna, and What the Duck is a production of ABC Radio National. This program was made on the lands of the Kulin Nation.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.